What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, 15th Annual Sports Medicine Update from Memorial Hermann, an awesome event. We are talking with Dr. Steve Lorch, pediatric cardiologist, and it's obviously a very controversial topic right now because everybody wants to protect the kids, but who's going to pay for it? We want to do screens on everybody, but we don't want to get sit out kids. And so, you know, Derek Cook joining us because he has some questions about some of the stuff. Dave Wilkerson from Memorial Hermann. So, just in a nutshell, should we screen all of our kids?
So, current recommendations are all kids should be screened every 2 years. There is a very good article that has been released by the American College of Cardiology back in 2007 that recommends a 12-point screening program based on history and physical, family history, personal history, social history, as well as physical examination, including heart murmurs and blood pressures as your initial screen. Based on the results of those screens, you can get into further testing as recommended. So whether it's an EKG, whether it's an echocardiogram, or treadmill stress testing, or something more esoteric. Those are the official recommendations.
All right, fair enough. Derek, why don't you go ahead and ask the same question that you asked him out there.
About the ECGs?
The 12-lead thing?
The 12-lead. So our school district just, through our Rotary Club, purchased three 12-lead ECGs that we were able to use in our school district. So we've been training our health op kids on how to do them through our local hospital, and how to place them and how to run those ECGs. But the question was, what was the legality reasons, or was there any legal issues concerning using those on a yearly basis, screening our incoming kids for our physicals?
Sure. I'm not a lawyer, so yeah. From a medical legal standpoint, I'm just giving you what I've been told by various lawyers. But if you are performing a medical test, which a 12-lead EKG would be, you're obligated to get that evaluated or looked at by a licensed medical physician or someone who is licensed to read and interpret those studies, whether it's an MD or a DO, or in some states an NP or a PA. I personally, from a legal standpoint, I would think you would be better off having everything that you run through those machines looked at by an MD.
Okay.
Next. Okay, so just tell me quickly, what is that?
So that is that's a short term we use for an electrocardiogram. Basically, what you do is you surround the heart with a varying number of stickers, usually 10 to 12. And you are looking at the voltages, the electrical voltages that the heart produces with every time it beats. We use those for a variety of things. We look at height of voltages and the shape of voltages, and we can determine heart mass, how thick the heart is, if there's strain being placed on the heart from an undiagnosed defect. We can sometimes diagnose if the heart is enlarged or dilated. The other thing that's very good at looking at is the heart rhythm and if there's any abnormalities in the electrical system of the heart.
Gotcha.
So another quick question. Once we run these ECGs, one of the hiccups that most of the school districts are having problems with, and you talked about it in your lecture in there, was the cost of it. Now the fact that we have our own ECGs, what would the cost be if we were to send these to you to have them read? And I don't want to put you on the spot or anything like that, but that's one of the things that we're kind of having a hiccup with, and
sure,
is finding a doctor who wouldn't charge us $300, $400, $500 to read 75, 100, 200 ECGs. Recommendations,
right? Honestly, I don't know.
Okay.
I know in general, sort of what we call is a global fee. So the cost of the depreciation of the equipment, the cost of running the equipment, the cost of the person doing the test, and the cost of interpretation for an ECG, if I owned the ECG, is about $10.
So if I were to send you
so
all
if you do everything...
I don't want to put you on the spot again. Don't
I
say
honestly,
anything.
Yeah, so honestly, I don't know. It would be something that would need to be negotiated.
Okay, all right.
ECGs are not rocket science. It's not hard to read them. They can be read pretty
quickly. It's just time.
It's just time.
Yeah. Especially when you've got 200 of them. I don't know. What do y'all do over?
The way we do it with, when I was in Cypher ISD and they took on the program, they had a local cardiologist that all the tests that were done with all those kids were sent to them. Their cardiologist within that group read them, and they sent back to us either a all clear, this kid needs to be sent in to be seen, or this kid needs to be pulled immediately and no activity till he's seen. That group has since went on to create Cypress ECG, a company that goes around, and they work with Spring Branch now. So the way we do it with Dr. Lorch is Cypress ECG comes in and does the ECGs. Their group reads them, and if any further cardiac follow-up is needed because of our sponsorship with Spring Branch ISD, then we get them into Dr. Lorch, and those kids have, it becomes a cost on that kid because now he has to get further testing and stuff. And if the kid's insurance, don't get me wrong, if the kid's insurance qualifies, then Dr. Lorch takes it. If it doesn't, then he usually works with the parents.
We work with the parents.
Because he wants the kid taken
Absolutely.
Care of.
That's the most important thing, is to get the kid the help that he needs. Yeah. In general, most in the United States, most of these projects like the Cypress ECG project are they're not-for-profits.
Right. That's who we actually
right.
Cypress ECG.
Right. So they're not-for-profits. Yeah. They are read by an adult physician usually. Sometimes in Austin, there's a group that reads pediatric cardiologists. There's a group of pediatric cardiologists that do read studies through a not-for-profit. And then you sort of work with the parent, and you work with the school district, and you work with the kid, and you figure out where to go and where do we go from here if something pops up abnormal.
All this was hypothetical. We're set in place. I'm
right.
just throwing it out there because I'm sure there's going to be thoughts and questions. People probably already thought about it. So
right. So if you're running your own ECGs, someone needs to look at them.
Yeah.
Whether it's a physician somewhere, whether it's an ER physician at your local regional medical center or someone. Generally, if you're with a school district, I would assume that you have a contact or a contract with physicians who are either present, so like for football, either present on the field or readily available to take care of your concussions, your neck injuries, your knee injuries, that type of stuff. I would contact that physician to figure out how best to go about getting these tests read.
Do you know that lady's name goes out there? That asked the green shirt.
Julie Prieto.
All right, so Julie Prieto asked about drugs or medicines that affect the long QT syndrome. So why don't you go ahead and tell
sure.
us that.
So there's a very good website, Long QT. I believe it's longqt.com. It may be longqt.net. But in general, there are many groups of medicines that will affect the QT interval of an ECG, which basically puts a kid at risk for developing ventricular fibrillation. The ones that most of our kids would be taking would be cough medicines, such as Sudafed, as well as antibiotics of a specific class called quinolones, which kids get for everything. they're given out a lot, with pneumonias or skin infections or anything like Levaquin, anything like that. Those would be the ones specifically that our kids would most likely be exposed to.
Do they have to be on those for a long period of time?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
No.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
With the last legislature, obviously the push was to get all high school athletes to do the ECG
mm-hmm.
testing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts
I
toward if that needs to be done, or do you just agree with following the 12th recommendation?
So officially, so I'm putting on two hats here. so officially, the ACC and the AHA recommend the 12 points of the physical examination and history. further testing is indicated. I think has been shown pretty well in many studies, both here and abroad in Europe, that we can get the cost down, and there is some benefit. The question comes down to who's going to pay for it. As with everything here in Texas, we don't like taxes. Who's going to pay for it? I personally would love to see every kid get screened. I'd love to see every kid get screened with an ECG. Is that going to be a reality in the next legislature? I sure hope so, but we'll see. As a parent, I would like to see that. I'd like to see my kids get screened. As a medical professional, the official recommendations are 12-point history and physical.
Anything else?
Got all my questions answered.
Thank you very much.
Do you know any of the other ones you were asked? What were some of the there was a guy that asked you another question out there.
That was about his kid. Personal question.
All right, but he was asking about signing
the one about
papers.
Physical, signing off on physicals.
Oh, yeah. So he had a question. If something pops up on the physical examination form, or not physical examination form, the history part of the physical examination form, and he then gives that to the physician who is going to look at the form, complete the physical examination, and sign off on it. Is the athletic trainer, what is the liability for the athletic trainer? Again, I'm not a judge. I'm not a lawyer by any stretch of the imagination. But what we've been told as physicians is once you sign that piece of paper, you're liable. And that should, I would think, would relieve the athletic trainer from any liability. Now, I would recommend if there's any questions about that, talking to your ISD. I'm sure your ISD has a nice, robust legal department, and I would shoot it by them. But I would think, as a physician, once I put my signature on a piece of paper clearing a kid for sports, I accept that liability. So I would think if you have a physician, even if you have positives on the history form, if you have a physician sign off on the form, that physician then assumes their liability away from the athletic trainer.
I know when we do physicals for the schools, our doc signed the front and back. Because they're signing to show that they've went through and reviewed the history questions,
right.
And then they sign the backside to
ours
clear them for.
Ours is actually going to the physical.
We try to take that off the athletic trainers at the school,
mm-hmm.
Not having to sign that they were the one that.
Yep. Ours actually looks at the medical history and go,
you
go fill this out. I need more info.
Right.
Yeah, and ours are the same. At Memorial Hermann, our docs will not do the physical unless the
history's
done.
Right.
So same thing. Those kids have to go sit to the side and
finish it up.
Right. And that's appropriate. You're not, yep. I mean, there's no reason to put you guys in that, from a liability standpoint, there's no reason to put you guys in that situation. You have enough on your plate.
Just like you said during the speech, we can only make our decisions off what information
is given
to us.
Correct.
Again, this is a little sidetrack, but
sure.
We have kids that, you know, it says recommended EKG or ECG or cleared after.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what do you do if I send a kid that says they're required to get the ECG, EKG, what do you send back to me to know that they're clear?
So what I do is generally, so we have our own form. So when I clear a kid from a heart standpoint, I'm only clearing it from a cardiovascular standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not looking at scoliosis. I'm not looking at concussion history. I'm not looking at neck injuries. I'm not looking at any of that other stuff. That's for the general pediatrician or the athletic trainer or orthopedic surgeon or whomever to determine if they're cleared to play. If I'm specifically looking at the heart, and we will give the trainer and the kid, the parent usually, hopefully, basically a clearance to play.
Right.
So we have a form that we fill out, and we hand it to the child, and if they request, because it is protected health information. So I will give it to the parent if they request, and we can forward it on to the athletic trainer or whomever. But I legally cannot do that without their permission. Right.
Because we were experiencing the kids would require the ECG, so then they would take it, and then they would just end up getting like a checkbox or a signature on that same physical form. And I was like, no, that's not good enough. I don't know. So we would send them, look, you have to go back and get a piece of paper on their letterhead that says you're cleared and the date that you did it. Correct. And that kind of thing.
So that's what, in my practice, that's what we do. We have our own letterhead, we have our own form, and we, if there are restrictions or if there aren't restrictions, and we will spell out what exactly the kid can and cannot do. Because there are situations where the child may be able to play certain sports and may not be able to play certain sports. So, yes for baseball, no for football. Yes for track, no for weightlifting. That type of stuff. So we can partially clear them. And just signing a piece of paper, yes, clear, is not good enough. So we will give the parents and whomever else they will allow us to give the full amount of information detailing what they are and what they are not cleared for.
All right, I agree. Best practices would be to have that clearly letterhead piece of paper. So.
Right.
Nope. This episode should be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/StephenLorch 2016. So it'll be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/StephenLorch 2016. That's where we'll have this interview. The other one in there will be something different because I release them, but I'll link the two.